listeners, let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host and guests and are not necessarily those of IR and its advertisers or affiliates.
This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, views of our guests. And, well, for this hour, our guest is going to be Al Duncan. And some years ago, I don't even remember how long ago it was, but I got a call from a fellow who said he'd written a book and he wanted me to read it, and in a weak moment I said that I would read the book. Now, I have so many books to read and it's not enough hours to read them all in, and it's one thing to read a book for a program I'm going to actually have to put on and have to know what we're going to be talking about, but this was a manuscript of an unpublished book. I didn't know it would ever be published, and I, in a weak moment, agreed to read it and got the manuscript. And it sort of sat there at the bottom of a pile of things for a long period of time. And Al called, Al Duncan had written the book. He called a couple of times and asked me if I'd read it, and I hadn't. And finally, I went to a meeting in Charleston, South Carolina, and I took the book with me. And I just sat down there in the afternoon before the meeting started to read the book, and it was the most amazing thing. I got so engrossed in this story. And it was the story of what happens after America has fallen and it has become a dictatorship. And then about suddenly, that was the end of the manuscript. I was about halfway through and that was all there was. And I was just really one of those books who wanted to finish reading. And I got back and called Al. He sent me the rest of the manuscript, and eventually I helped to get the book published because I thought it was so important. It was called The Master Plan, and it was the story of a man caught in this web of intrigue of an authoritarian society and simply going along with it because certainly it was the way to get ahead. You get a government job and you do what the government tells you to, and everything's fine. But what happens when you begin to question what the government is doing and of course its programs? Because, of course, the history of mankind is always that government oppresses the people. That was the beauty of America, because here in the United States, the power of government over their power over the individual is limited. In fact, that was the secret of America. We had a weak centralized government because we had a moral people initially, and we had people who feared God, and as a result, they could be free. But, of course, that will not work unless we have a moral people. That's why, of course, the Supreme Court set out to destroy the moral foundation of our country in the 1960s by taking God and prayer out of our schools, because they realized if you could destroy the morality of the nation, you could destroy the nation. That legalized pornography for all intents and purposes and certainly centralized all power in Washington, D.C. and found a woman had a right to an abortion, and that way you could have all the promiscuous sex you wanted to and begin to work to break down the structure of our families and our moral perspective. Anyway, with us tonight is the author of the book, Al Duncan. Hi, Al. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I tell you, I could just let you continue to go on. I really appreciate you having me on tonight. I hear some music. Should I continue?
All right. Well, you go ahead. I'll tell you when to stop. Go ahead.
Very good. Well, first let me say I'm grateful to you and your wife, Barbara, after after all, you did write the preface, and I certainly appreciate it because Barbara's the one who actually edited it. But the story really starts in 1981. That was the first time I had really started reading the Bible. And not knowing anything or knowing any better, I started naturally at the book of Genesis. And I read all the way through until I worked my way to the end of the Bible.
All right, you hold our thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment with Al Duncan, the author of The Master Plan. Okay, I'll go right ahead.
And so while I was studying the book of Revelation, I had read the whole Bible now, and I'd gotten to Revelation. A friend of mine gave me a book called The Fourth Reich of the Rich by Des Griffin. And toward the end of The Fourth Reich of the Rich was a chapter that was titled The Master Plan, which is naturally where I got the title for my book. I couldn't help but notice that the two books were really alike. They were similar. One, referring to the Bible and Revelation in particular, Jesus personally dictated to John. Now, Christ told John to write what has taken place, what is taking place, and what is about to take place from that moment until the end of the world. Now, likewise, it appears that Satan dictated the master plan and did so to one of his servants or a number of servants over a period of years. But just as Revelation, the master plan revealed what they had accomplished, what they were accomplishing, and what they intended to accomplish in order to rule the world and control everybody in it. So naturally, this got my attention. And after I had studied both, and I do mean studied both, Revelation and this master plan, I was in, which was undoubtedly written by the devil, or channeled by the devil through men, it appeared that the goal was not only to rule the world, but the hidden plan was to kill two-thirds of the population, steal all of the riches, and destroy everything that was good and right and just. And the comparison of the two made it, within my mind, no doubt, that one was written by men, but through the devil, and the other was written by God. Whereas the biblical account, although revealing the same scenario, unveiled the true predator behind the wicked plan, and then gives the only way to avoid this hellish outcome that's awaiting anybody who gives their allegiance to this evil devil. But what I found to be more important than just the information was the hope and security of the better glorious place with a loving, caring Savior and God for eternity. So naturally I came to the Lord, accepted Him as my Lord and Savior, and I must say it was due to both of these books. So I, from that moment on, I pretty much dedicated my life, Dr. Stan, to reveal both of these books and the authors of both of them.
All right, you hold there for just a moment, and we'll bring all the stations back on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Al was simply talking about how he really got started back in 81 of reading the Bible, and yet he was, of course, read from Genesis right through Revelation. And Revelation, of course, was God or Christ dictating to John the Divine, what was going to happen in the past, what was happening at that time in the history of the world. This was certainly the first century A.D., and then what was going to happen in the future. And then Al came across a book written by another friend of ours named Des Griffin called The Fourth Reich of the Rich. And there's a chapter towards the end called The Master Plan, same title as Al's book, only this appeared to have been written, really, it was a devilish, a demonic plan of how the devil was going to take control of the world and was going to kill large parts of the population, perhaps two-thirds of the population, and was going to destroy everything worthwhile and good and noble in our society. And as, of course, Al read that, he realized, of course, the satanic influence on the world that he was living in 1981. And eventually, of course, he wrote the manuscript for the Master Plan. And Al Suddenly, when did you publish the book?
The book was published in 1999, so we're looking at now close to a decade, Dr. Stan.
Right.
And you know, I look back, and the reason that I chose to write this a fictitious story as opposed to an academic account was pretty much threefold. I knew that most people just weren't going to sit down and read an academic account of the New World Order like you and I have and do all the time, but that they would read or may read an exciting adventure story. So that's what I attempted to write. And most who have read it said just about the same thing that you did, that it's pretty exciting and pretty hard to put down once you get started.
Go right ahead.
The second reason that I wrote the master plan was that that most writers, and I do say most, they're experts in certain areas, or one or two areas, or facets of the New World Order. And so I wanted to put them all together so that one had an opportunity to see them all in one book. And then the third and most important is the spiritual aspect of this evil plan to rule the world. These elitists worship Lucifer, and I mean that literally. They actually believe the devil's lie that was told to Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. As you know, Dr. Stan, and so clearly illustrated in your book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, they believe that Lucifer, the light bearer, is the true God who came to impart and enlighten mankind with the knowledge of good and evil, and that this enlightenment would give mankind the ability to make a choice without the input or influence of God. Now, that's the lie. It is furthered by the belief that the true God was trying to keep or really hold back this truth from mankind, where in actuality we both know that God was trying to protect his children from the evil and death that permeates the world today. And Lucifer knew that once mankind was subject to this knowledge, he could then control them through their sensual fleshly nature. And this is clearly seen in all the secret societies such as the Skull and Bones and Masonry and the like. In fact, I have a video put together by a friend of ours, Dr. Stan, David Wigner, that shows George Herbert Walker Bush claiming, "We've finally reached 1,000 points of light. It's only to the understanding and ear, like that you and I know, that this statement is really understood." And if I may say, Dr. Stan, I'd like to give your listeners a taste of what the master plan covers.
Go right ahead.
Thank you. I do a fair history of the United Nations with quotes from the UN Charter and also the Earth Charter that was written by Maurice Strong and Gorbachev. And most people don't know that it was John D. Rockefeller, Jr., who donated the land for the United Nations, but the building was built by the United States taxpayers. Nor do they know that it was the Rockefellers who were not only influential in starting the United Nations, but also the Trilateral Commission. It was Rockefeller's money that helped the funding of the initiation of the Council on Foreign Relations, which, as we know, is the shadow government here in America. The Rockefellers were also one of the initial drafters of the Federal Reserve and dozens of foundations and institutions created to destroy freedom and create a one-world government. If any of you doubt this, all you have to do is read a direct quote from David Rockefeller himself in his memoirs, and it's on page 405, and I'll quote it to you. "Some even believe we are part of a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States, characterizing my family and me as internationalists, and of conspiring with others around the world to build a more integral, global, political, and economic structure, one world, if you will. If that's the charge, I stand guilty, and I'm proud of it." Now, the Rockefellers are by far the richest family in America. Some estimate $20 trillion strong.
Well, of course, the important thing is that they control the media, and because they control the media, they can convince the people that it's Bill Gates and Warren Buffett are the richest people, whereas the vast fortune of the Rockefellers dwarfs the Bill Gates or Warren Buffett or anyone else in the world, except perhaps the Rothschild family. Because, of course, the Rockefellers control banking, and they control Exxon, and they control Chevron, and many of our large pharmaceutical companies. And, in fact, the tentacles of the octopus are literally every place and have been for over 100 years. And people don't remember, you know, back at the beginning of the last century, of the 20th century, there were a number of books going into the ruthless tactics of the Rockefellers and the murders that were committed in their name, but that's never mentioned today. People have to understand that our reality is created by what we read, by what we see, by what we hear, and the media in America is controlled. 90 to 95% of the major media outlets are controlled by five mega corporations. The documentation on that can be found in a book entitled The New Media Monopoly, written by Professor Ben Bekdakian, who for many years was at the University of California in Berkeley. And you'd simply go down and find out how all the newspaper chains are consolidating. Certainly the publishing houses, I may want to call Simon & Schuster, I'll find out that they have 20 publishing houses all under the same directorship, and they are essentially centralizing all publishing. And so there are a few small publishing houses that get books out, but they have difficulty getting them distributed to regular channels, because they have everything tied up. They know if they can control the media, they can control our reality.
Well, you're absolutely correct, Dr. I remember when I first got the book published, Spring Arbor was the largest Christian distributor of Christian material in the market, and then they were bought out by a secular organization, and the same thing with the music field, and they were also bought out. And so really there's no wonder why the New Age and Eastern mysticism dominates the racks of Christian bookstores today. I would just about say that the Rockefellers control America in the same way that the Rothschilds control Europe. Their ability to maintain this control is basically through the three M's, and you mentioned one of them, and that's money, the media, and the military. There's about $8 billion in circulation in the United States today. So if you possess more than 20 times that amount, you can pretty much control any part of the economy you wish, whether it's the stock market or the price of gold or silver, whatever. And then when you own and control the media, and you said it, about 90% of the written word, as well as what is seen and heard via the airwaves, you can interject thoughts, stimulate others, and literally control the thinking and beliefs and the direction of the people. And it's almost mind-boggling. Zygmunt Brzezinski, who's also a close associate with the Rockefellers, he said, and this is a rough paraphrase, you could probably quote it better than I, Dr. Stan, but he says something like, they will not have one original thought, only those that we have placed within their minds. And then we have the last of the three M's, which is the military, or they really call it the military-industrial complex. It was first coined or termed by Dwight D. Eisenhower, a five-star general, who, after becoming the President of the United States, saw and warned the American people about how the military-industrial complex controls our military by producing the high-tech, state-of-the-art weaponry. It's this military-industrial complex that steers the direction of the military, and after the total destruction, rebuilds from the rubble that the war produced. Thus, we have organizations or corporations such as Carlyle, the Group, Blackwater, Halliburton. Those are just to name a few. These elitists boast that all the wars fought are not to win, but for change.
And, of course, I think it's important for our listeners to understand that the United States spends more money for its military than all the rest of the nations in the world put together. That you can see the documentation of the defense. There's an organization of retired military officers, Defense Intelligence Organization, I believe it is. That's not quite the right one. I can get the address for anybody who wants to get it, or we can get their information. And certainly, we spend more money on our military than all the rest of the nations in the world put together. And then, of course, We have more people in prison proportionally than any other nation in the world. There are 7 million Americans in prison, probation, or parole. And yet they tell us we're free. A lot of the people in prison are FBI agents and CIA agents and DEA agents who tried to tell the American people what was going on, and they couldn't allow that. They put them in prison and trumped up charges, and I know one fellow who was told if he ever dared tell the truth, he'd spend the rest of his life in prison. And today he refuses to talk to anybody. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, go right ahead, Al.
Well, I was saying about how the elitists boast that that wars are not fought to win, but to bring about a change. And what they can accomplish in 5 years of wartime would take decades under normal conditions. And the best example is the 9-1-1. They never could have passed Homeland Security or any of the other laws that literally wiped out our freedoms unless we had a 9-1-1 or an event like 9-1-1. Evidence proves that every war within the past 250 years was initiated by these one world order global elitists. There's a threefold purpose for war. One, to assert control, which in essence is to take away all liberties. And two, extract the wealth from the people. And three, reduce the population. In the master plan, I also cover treaties. Now, treaties are important because treaties supersede the Constitution. This is the tool used to make inroads around the Constitution. And that's exactly what NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, does, which is also covered in length in the master plan, but along with GATT and the World Trade Organization and the ICC and all the rest of the treaties, UNESCO, that nullify the U.S. Constitution. The one not mentioned, and I don't mention it in the master plan simply because it hadn't been enacted yet, and that's CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Agreement, which is considered to be NAFTA with steroids. Now, Ron Paul, and I don't know if you've ever read this one, Dr. Stan, but he does a writing, it's called The Sausage Factory, and it's an article that anybody can download from his government website, but he gives an excellent account of how CAFTA was passed by the House. He says CAFTA was presented on the floor and was unanimously rejected. He said, and then, defying all the House rules, all proceedings were halted, and a large number of representatives from the Bush administration entered the room and began to offer deals to all the congressmen. Do you need a bridge? How about a road repair? What about schools? What do you need? And after they had approached everyone in the House at the tune of $5 billion taxpayer dollars, the Speaker called for another vote and CAFTA was passed. You have to keep in mind an important factor here. NAFTA was ramrodded through by a Democratic president, but instituted or initiated by a Republican president, while CAFTA was ramrodded through by Republican president. I mean, this is exactly what Bush did. It was ramrodded through by a Republican president. It will more than likely be implemented by a Democratic president, which shouts loudly that this global move is bipartisan. Which brings us to another area that I cover in the book. The two major political parties give the illusion that there are differences, when in actuality, the choice is the same. They let the voter believe that he's actually electing a candidate where all the candidates are handpicked well in advance and then presented to the public as they were the only qualified candidates available. It also gives a false appearance of rivalry between the two candidates. And when that's the furthest thing from the truth, the only adversaries are the gullible people who are stimulated by the highly paid...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and of course Al is simply talking about the wars we've had, and I would simply point out that all of the wars we have are contrived, and I would point out to the Spanish-American War. There was tremendous propaganda put out about how the wicked Spanish king was mistreating people and killing them in his colonial empire. And of course, they put the battleship Maine at a dock at the harbor in Havana. And why you would do that when there was a lot of tension between Spain and the United States, nobody's ever really explained. And then suddenly there's an explosion, and the ship goes down, and a number of Americans are killed, American sailors are killed on the battleship Maine. And immediately the media says, oh, it was the Spanish that sunk our ship. They had an explosive. They used a mine, an explosive mine. They blew open the side of the ship, and of course, they killed all those Americans. We've got to go to war with Spain. And of course, it wasn't true at all. When they raised the ship, they found out that the explosion was within and without. And all those Americans died for nothing. And between 200,000 and 1.5 million Filipinos died in the ensuing Philippine-American War, which most Americans had never heard of. But you can look it up on the Internet, Wikipedia, the Philippine-American War. And the United States military was responsible for the deaths of between 200,000 and 1.5 million Filipinos who wanted to be free. And that war lasted from about 1898 up until about 1902. And some of them were from disease, but it was simply because we destroyed the infrastructure of their country just like we're doing in Iraq today. And there was no sanitation, and there were no medical supplies. And between 200,000 and 500 and 1.5 million Filipinos died, and the justification was, well, there was a wicked king over there in Spain, that's why we had to go to war. And then we went into the First World War because of the propaganda about how the wicked Huns were cutting off the breasts of Belgian women and raping the Belgian women and cutting off the hands of little Belgian boys, and there wasn't a bit of truth in it. We went into World War II because Adolf Hitler was an evil man, and he really was an evil man, but nobody ever points out that it was American corporations that built the military equipment that was used for Adolf Hitler, not only before the war, but during the war, and that the English were encouraging Adolf Hitler to go into Alsace-Lorraine and into Austria and into the northern part of Czechoslovakia, and that's all covered in a book called Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, written by the leading historian of the last century, Professor Carol Quigley. And, of course, the book was actively suppressed because they can't let the American people know that England and the United States were encouraging Adolf Hitler, and many American dignitaries were supporting him, including Henry Ford, who was, got the highest decoration that the Nazis could give to anybody. But, of course, what was so unconscionable is they were helping Hitler not only before the war but during the war, and providing, of course, oil, diesel oil for his submarines out in the middle of the Atlantic so that they could go out and of course, shoot down, torpedo American ships and kill our servicemen. And we were helping Adolf Hitler all during the war, but we can't let the American people know that, or how we helped the Nazis escape to South America with a rat line, or Nazi war criminals brought to America under Operation Paperclip. And then, of course, we had to get into Korea. That was a war. Of course, it was a no-win war. And then we had to get into Vietnam, and there was no Gulf of Tonkin incident. It was all contrived, and 58,000 Americans and 3 million South Vietnamese or North Vietnamese died as a result of that unnecessary war that was intentionally prolonged. And then, of course, we got into the first Gulf War after the American ambassador, April Glaspie, encouraged Saddam Hussein to go ahead and invade Kuwait, and then we got into the second Gulf War. We went into Afghanistan because the wicked Osama bin Laden was there, but once he'd escaped, why did we keep fighting in Afghanistan? Why didn't we follow him into Pakistan? Why did we go into Iraq, and why have we been fighting there for four long years, four long, horrible, bloody years, and how many boys have lost their lives and or will never be the same because of their wounds? People have to understand that this is how the world really works, because there's a group of people working behind the scenes who have a different agenda. And that's what Al's talking about in the master plan. It is just totally evil. Go right ahead, Al.
Well, I have to say, Dr. Stan, you missed one. You missed we bombed Japan with a horrible atrocity, knowing good and well that we could have not only prevented it, but they tried to surrender, and we wouldn't allow them to.
Right, for about 6 months. Go ahead.
Okay. In the master plan, I do a pretty in-depth history of the Federal Reserve System. The Fed is simply a clever, diabolical scheme to divert wealth from the people and into the coffers of the elite. The actual owners of the Federal Reserve System are a network of private banks, insurance companies, and investment banks who created this institution by passing it through an almost empty Congress.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Okay, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Al Duncan, and of course his book is The Master Plan. Al, go ahead, pick up the story.
Yes, I was mentioning the Federal Reserve System and how they were able to pass this through Congress the day before Christmas and the Christmas recess in December 1913. In Lewis versus the United States, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals stated, "The reserve banks are not federal institutions, but are independent, privately owned, and locally controlled corporations." And the U.S. Congress in 1913 termed the money trust a cabal of financial leaders abusing the public trust to consolidate control over many industries. This, with this understanding, let's take a brief look back at Alan Greenspan and his 18-year tenure as a loyal servant of the carefully picked chairman of the Board of Governors. This Alan Greenspan was a Wall Street consultant whose clients included the influential J.P. Morgan Bank, among others. Before becoming the Fed chairman, Greenspan had sat on the boards of some of the most powerful corporations in America, including Mobil Oil Corporation, Morgan Guarantee Trust Company, and J.P. Morgan and Company. Greenspan's term can be summed up as one successive crisis into an ever larger one, with laws and regulations, or lack thereof, established to force the taxpayers to foot the bailout bill. This is no different than what's taking place right now today with the subprime loan. What he did there, to me, was criminal. And as you know, Dr. Stan, I'm a real estate broker, and I watched this thing 3.5-4 years back. In fact, I even told a lot of real estate agents in our office, and very few, if any, would listen. But I saw it coming then. But this man said, whether it be, it makes no difference, the whole purpose of his tenure was to form rules, regulations that would cause the American taxpayers to have to bail out all of the financial institutions. And this is exactly what he did. I don't care if it was October, the stock crash in 1987, and the manipulation of the stock recovery through use of, you know what these are, the new financial instruments called derivatives, or the 1997 Asian crisis, or the 1998 Russian state default and insuring collapse.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Al Duncan. And before we go on, Al, do you have a website or any contact information you'd like to get out?
Actually, I do not have a website, Dr. Stan. I will give out my email address.
Okay, go right ahead.
It's Al Duncan, A-L-D-U-N-C-A-N, at Pacific. PACIFIC.net, and also I'll give you a phone number, and it is my real estate office. It's 707-262-1112.
And I bet the real estate business is pretty dead these days, isn't it?
Pretty dead these days, so anybody, they will not have to wait in line or get a busy signal.
And I think it's important that people understand that what we're seeing today, this implosion of the financial system, didn't happen by accident. It happened by plan, and if you doubt that they knew exactly what was going on, you need to get our little pamphlet. It's called The Financial Meltdown. It's a compilation of five letters, five of our newsletters, And we'll explain to you what happened. It will verify the fact that they knew what was happening, and they simply lied about it. And Alan Greenspan went on 60 Minutes, and fortunately Leslie Stahl, who was interviewing him, had done her homework. And when Alan made some ridiculous statements, she corrected him and pointed out that obviously he said he didn't know what was going on, but as early as the year 2000, other members of the Federal Reserve Board were pointing out the danger of these loans that were being given. You could buy a house with nothing down and no credit history at all, and of course paying perhaps only either a very, very small sum on the principal or nothing on the principal at all, just the interest on the loan. A wonderful, wonderful way, of course, to set up a system that was doomed to fail. I mean, you always had to have money down to borrow a couple of $100,000, but you didn't, of course, when it came to the housing boom. And they said, oh, well, we wanted everybody to have a house. No. They set us up for what's happening now, because what we're going to see is the implosion of our economic system and the redistribution of America's wealth to other nations. That's in the process going on today. And other nations throughout the world, through their sovereign investment funds, are coming in here and buying up our industries and buying up our infrastructure as America goes from a first world nation to a third world nation towards a dictatorship, and it's only a matter of time. And that's really sort of the subject of the book that Al has written. What happens to America when we have a dictatorship? And, of course, getting into the background of the satanic master plan that is underway today. We've got Herman calling in from Carmel. Let's take Herman. Hi, Herman. Did you have a question or comment?
Yes, a fascinating interview. I'd like to ask Mr. Duncan, since he's both a novelist and a real estate broker, what does he feel have a sense for that real estate values could drop in the next few years? Because obviously life will go on and people need to make decisions as far as whether they should rent or buy, or do you have any comments, sir?
I do. This is my advice that I've given everybody for the last 2.5 years. I expect this real estate downturn to continue for at least 2.5 more years. I say that, and I'd like to explain this, because what Greenspan did was, they're called arms, between 1 and 5 year arms.
That's an adjustable rate mortgage.
Exactly. So the rate can change with whatever the contract according to the arm. Now let me explain a little bit more. So let's say we're in 2.5 years now into this 5 years. So we have approximately 2.5 more years to go. And what happens is, if you have a 2, 3, or 4 year arm, let's just say a 3 year arm, what happens is your rate goes up. You're now paying interest only. Now you're going to have to pay interest and principal. So naturally, this is going to cause you either, number one, you can't get it refinanced, because how could you? The value is not there anymore.
In other words, the value of the home you bought, say, for $300,000 is worth now $200,000 value on the house, and so they're not going to refinance that for $300,000 when the house is only worth $200,000 unless you can put up $100,000. And of course, you don't have $100,000. If you take an adjustable rate mortgage, you obviously are strapped for funds. And that, of course, is when people begin to lose their homes or take a cut in salary. Why, of course, the whole system begins to implode.
So my advice would be, number one, now is definitely not the time to buy real estate. That's number one. Number two, I do not see the prices ever returning to where they were. This thing could very well wipe out the middle class, or it's definitely going to be one of the tools that they use to wipe out the middle class. But as far as real estate is concerned, I really don't believe that it's going to ever come back like it was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Did I answer your question, sir?
Yes, you have.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
So basically, you're telling people to hold on.
Exactly. Now is not the time to invest in real estate, or even to make a purchase on a home. What's going to happen with these people that do have these arms is they're going to end up walking away from the homes, which means that the market will be flooded with more foreclosures. And I know real estate brokers that are living on nothing but foreclosures. That's number one. Number two, as they walk away from them, there's more, the market is flooded with these foreclosures, but it's better to rent.
Mm-hmm. So even if there were a period of inflation or hyperinflation, do you see the government trying to inflate its way out of this crisis?
Well, I think what the government is doing right now is trying to hold it together. But, and I say that right now, because I believe that there is coming a time when they will release or allow it to actually explode. I foresee a crash that is going to make the 1929 stock market crash look like a picnic. But it's all part of the plan.
Okay, Herman, does that answer your question?
We'll keep listening. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And we're not going to take any more calls, at least until we we'll announce it. But right now, go right ahead, Al. You were talking.
Okay. I was talking about Greenspan, and I think we covered him pretty much. But I also cover in the book the environmental agencies, which this is just another part of the move to confiscate monies from the people. We look at this global warming situation, and all it is, it will enable them to tax us for pollution that really they caused. You and I don't cause enough pollution to change the environment. It's the factories. It's the large institutions that do so. But in any event, this is going to give them an opportunity to charge. And I see that LOST, the L-O-S-T, that's the Lands and Oceans and Seas Treaty. That treaty is the one that is going to give the United Nations the teeth that it needs in order to hire a standing army to enforce the taxes that they're going to charge. If they can control the seas, the air above the seas, and the oceans or ocean floors beneath them, then that means there is nowhere you can go across the continent without traversing their rule or where they have total control. So they can actually control the ships, and I do mean the military, what they can, the armaments they can carry, passengers a jet plane can carry. We can go on and on with this, but if pollution, let's say from the United States, if the pollution floats into the oceans or the seas, then they can charge us, tax us for polluting the ocean. So this is going to be an avenue that is going to be used by the United Nations to get the teeth and really take power and control that they've never had before. Yeah. But I do touch on the environmental agencies. I also touch...
Before we go on beyond the law, the Sea Treaty, the L-O-S-T Treaty, let me point out that if people can go back, and in April of 1974, there was an article in Foreign Affairs magazine by Richard Gardner where he was talking how they were going to be able to do an end run around our Constitution. And he said, the Constitution's in the way of our going towards world government. But what we'll do is we'll use the General Agreement on Tariff and Tracts, and we'll use NAFTA, and we'll use the Law of the Sea Treaty to an end run around the Constitution to bring about world government. That was April of 74, article by Richard Gardner. We actually have the article, of course. We'd be glad to provide it for you, but you can get it at the library. It's in Foreign Affairs Magazine, the official journal of America's invisible government, the Council on Foreign Relations. So understand that this is all planned. What's really so frightening is the average American doesn't understand that legislation is actually in the Senate committees at the present time and will probably go through the Senate because there's little or no opposition. Why? Because they control the media, and the average American has never heard of the LOST or the Law of the Sea Treaty. Go right ahead, Al.
Well, then I talk about the sustainable development and the public and private partnerships, which is pretty much strong today in the area of construction. I talk about the Trans Texas. Now let me say this: the NAFTA, the North American Union, is what's enabling the Trans Texas Corridor, the superhighway. And so it's covered. Now, naturally, I knew nothing about that at the time, almost 10 years ago, but the avenue for that is NAFTA. Then I cover concentration camps, and in fact, the main character escapes from one of these concentration camps. I do a thing on the executive orders and also on Echelon, the surveillance systems. I do a good chapter on RFID, the radio frequency identification, and I state that the first ID card, because this is their plan, we're talking about 10, 11, 12 years ago when I actually wrote this, but I talk about the ID cards, which are soon to come into effect now, and I also talk about the implants, which is going to be the ultimate. And if you keep in mind that this is the devil's system, this worldly system right now is the devil's, and there's no question. The Bible says he is the god of this world, and he's not omnipresent as God is. So his only means of control is surveillance, and that's where Echelon came in, which is America's secret global surveillance network. But the chip, where he will literally know anything, this is what they say, anything that moves or breathes will be chipped.
Amen. And of course, right now, why all farm animals are to be chipped by sometime this year. I mean, if you've got a chicken, if you've got a goose, if you've got a sheep, you are required by federal law to have that chipped and registered with the federal government. There's no such thing as pets anymore. This is a potential farm animal. Because it's a potential farm animal, you will register with the federal government, and you will let the federal government know where it is, and if it's moved from your one field to another, you have to report that, or you will be a federal criminal. And you say, that sounds crazy. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're moving towards a dictatorship in America. Of course, in the name of, well, we have to have this information to fight mad cow disease. Of course, we're not going to go ahead and test our cattle for mad cow disease, because we might get a false positive. So we're not going to try to do the logical thing to stop the spread of the disease. You're just going to have to, of course, chip every private chicken you have, every goose you have, every little lamb or a rabbit. These are all potential farm animals, and they're going to have to be registered with the federal government, and you're going to have to keep them constantly appraised of it. And you say, that's crazy talk. They're talking today about chipping children already, certainly all most domestic animals. I'm talking about our cats and dogs are being chipped by the veterinarians, and there certainly may be advantages to it, but the one problem is that many of them develop tumors, sarcoma, there's tumors around the chip, but that doesn't matter. They want really to put them into Alzheimer's patients. They want to put them into children. Eventually, they want to put them into everyone, because somebody could steal your identity. You remember those television ads about a man who talked like a woman and a woman who talked like a man, and identity theft, identity theft, identity theft. And they keep talking about identity theft, but the solution, of course, is if we have everybody chipped, they can't steal your identity, and we can tell who the illegal aliens are, because they won't have a chip. Go right ahead, Al.
Well, you know, you're absolutely correct, Dr. Stan, and that's exactly what it's coming to. In the master plan, and I somewhat touched on this earlier, but they talk about not only the one world order, but also bringing in a leader. Now, there's a number of ways that they can do this, but the fact of the matter is that they are, and they are because the Bible says they are. I've never been under delusion since 1981, actually March the 21st, 1982, when I was born again. I was never under delusion that that this thing was not going to come to pass, or that by some fluke I was going to avoid it. I always felt that I was going to be at this end time. But the point is this: there will be a world leader, and he will be evil, and he will control. I never forget, you did a radio interview, maybe you remember, Dr. Stan, with Joel Skousen, and he mentioned a friend who lived next door to Dick Cheney, and he said that for weeks on end, there were these diesel trucks, these dirt haulers, lined up, coming into Dick Cheney's property, getting the dirt, and then going out. And then after that, the same scenario repeated itself. However, there were now cement trucks going in. So it was obvious that Dick Cheney
is building an underground chamber. In fact, they actually had a lot of explosions there as they were blasting out this massive chamber to protect Dick Cheney and his family, but they're not planning on protecting you and I.
They
know what's coming. They just don't want the American people to be prepared for the coming nuclear war.
Well, that brings about the next question, and that is this. If we know this is coming, then what are we doing to be prepared?
But most people are not, because, of course, they're being put to sleep. Certainly any effective civil defense system has been discouraged in America, and our plea to our people is, you're going to have to look after yourself, because believe me, they would just as soon do away with a lot of the American people. There are too many people here, just useless eaters. We'll be right back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program. Well, go ahead, Al. You've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, here again is the question, and my job is to provoke thought here. I've heard a number of interviews with different people, and they say that you better have your guns ready and you better be ready. Well, I'm here to tell you this. The Bible says, not by power nor by might, but by my spirit, says the Lord. It's time for you to get so close to Jesus Christ that he will lead everything you think and everything you say and everything you do. You will not be able to save yourself. There is no doubt about it. These people are ready. They have a military now. They have been training the police to act as the military. They will kill you. And that the first thing they'd like is for you to break out your guns, thinking you will be able to combat them. Absolutely ridiculous. These people will come to kill you. And that is all part of the population control. So again, my job is to provoke thought, and that's what I'm doing. It's not going to be by your power. It's going to be by the Holy Spirit that you're saved. So if you don't know Christ, then the first thing you better do is get to know him. And then if you do know Christ, then you need to get as close to him as you possibly can, because he's the only one that could save any of us.
I agree with you totally, and I think that, of course, your book has a tremendous emotional impact, and I don't think it's the sort of book, when you read it, why, of course, you will never, never forget the ending. I'm not even going to suggest how it ends, because that would detract from it. Some people were mad at Al the way the book ended, but it was the only way that it could end. It was beautifully done.
And there is a classic salvation in it, and a classic salvation message. So anyway, I would encourage all to read it, but again, my main encouragement is, Christ is the only answer.
Amen to that. Somebody just called in and asked if the Antichrist is alive on the earth today, and I don't think anybody knows the answer to that question, but I wouldn't be at all surprised, because I think we're moving very, very rapidly towards the times that are prophesied in the Bible.
I agree wholeheartedly.
All right, well, our guest this evening has been Al Duncan, his book, The Master Plan. Al's telephone number is 707-262-1112. That's 707-262-1112. The book is truly prophetic, written certainly a decade ago, and yet there is so much information in that book of things that are actually coming to pass today. Al, good night. God bless you.
God bless you, Dr. Standing. Please, keep up the good work. We'll all keep you in prayer.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Al Duncan's book is beautifully written. I will tell you, you will have a hard time putting it down. It's called The Master Plan. It has an ending that you'll never forget. And, of course, I take a little interest in it because I did help Al. We went in 50-50 to get the book published, and we've sold most of the copies. I still have some, and Al has them at 707-262-1112. That's 707-262-1112. Or if you'd like to get them through Radio Liberty, our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, The Master Plan. A gripping adventure novel with a very important message and an invitation for you to come to have a personal relationship with our Lord, and then an ending that you will never forget. So I think I probably have a case of the books, and Al may have a case of the books. That's when they're gone, they're gone. But it was an important book. I'm so glad we got it out and got it distributed across America. Well, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us. And if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. I also want to mention that we now are going to go ahead and actually stamp out another 1,000 copies of my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness, and it's been 2 years since we did the last ones. They're all gone now. But if you'd like to get 25 copies of the Brotherhood of Darkness for a suggested gift of $99, plus shipping, if you'd like to get 25 copies of the Brotherhood of Darkness for a suggested gift of $99, which means that you can give them away. They're nicely packaged. They tell the story of what's really going on from a spiritual point of view, and to the backdrop of Agatha Christie's story, The Murder on the Orient Express. So if you're interested, give us a call. Certainly the offer will close here within the next week or so, next 10 days. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, and certainly it will help us, but it will give you the opportunity to be able to certainly lend or give away these talks, because we need people to understand that behind everything going on are powerful spiritual forces. And you can't understand the Bilderbergers or the Trilateral Commission or the Council on Foreign Relations or the Rosicrucians or the Theosophists or Masonry or certainly Opus Dei or the Jesuits or the secret societies that work within not only the Catholic Church but the Protestant Church and within the Jewish religion. You can't understand any of them unless you understand the spiritual component of the battle that's being fought off today. And that battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. So again, if you're interested, our number 1-800-544-8927. We've got a great new 4-tape set on the Bilderbergers. We also carry the DVD by Alex Jones, Endgame, which is excellent, and two books, one by Daniel Estulin, it's simply the Bilderbergers, the other, Bilderberger Diary by James Tucker, who's been tracking the Bilderbergers for 25 years. Fascinating book. My wife's reading it now, and she keeps telling me about all the amazing things in the book that Mr. Tucker is, the information he's accumulated over 25 years of tracking the Bilderberger group. Then if you want to know about the satanic involvement of this group, the book Satanic Crimes. Satanic Crimes, we have a 4-tape set or 4-CD set by that same title. We've got a great new 4-tape set on weather modification. You want to know why the weather's so strange? Do you know that they can create storms and droughts and tornadoes and hurricanes? And why would they want to be able to do that sort of thing? Well, we've got people who have a different worldview. And wouldn't it be wonderful if we could have world famine? And then there wouldn't be so many people in the world. So basically the 4-tape set on weather modification, the DVD on weather modification, the book on weather modification, great new 4-tape set on spy ships, and of course a book on spy ships. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. pray for our leaders and ministers, and pray for Radio Liberty. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guest. And for the next hour, our guest is going to be Brad Friedman. And Brad has taken it upon himself to really track down and monitor what's happening with voting across America. Now, it's very difficult for the average American to believe that the voting system is rigged in America, that the voting machines do not give an accurate accounting, that they would actually try to steal elections here in America, that there'd be voting irregularities all across our land. But of course, Brad is right on the top of that, and there's a very serious question about some of the things that have happened within the last several weeks having to do with the elections here, and specifically some of the things that happened on Super Tuesday just earlier this week. So with that as a background, Brad Friedman, thank you so very much for being with us, and tell us what's going on and what you found out so far about what's happened. I don't know if you know anything about New Hampshire. They're calling for a recount there at the vote. Yeah. Go ahead. You just pick up the story.
Well, you, thank you, Sammy, and good to be here. Hope you sound well. Good to talk to you again.
Oh, I'm doing just great.
Great. You mentioned why the trouble that folks have, getting their brain around the idea that folks would want to steal elections in this country. You know, there are millions and billions and trillions of dollars at stake in each of these elections. So it's nothing new that people have wanted to, game democracy, steal it where they can here. I think the difference now is we're understanding how precious it is, and there are more and more citizen advocates and activists out there who are keeping their eye on these things, more so than ever before after, the recent record we have had with some pretty horrible elections. And you're right, there have been a lot of trouble since the first primary back there on January 5th January 8th in New Hampshire, which was frankly an out-and-out mess. And in that race, there was both a Republican candidate and a Democratic candidate who ended up calling for a hand count after a bunch of anomalies occurred, most notably the fact that Barack Obama was leading in so many different polls, all of them, scores of different independent polls, all found that he was beating Hillary Clinton up in that race in the pre-election polls. And then the results came back, and what do you know? The polls were exactly right on the Republican side and also on the Democratic side, except for Obama and Hillary, in which case the results were pretty much flipped. Well, one thing that we know, the good news up there in New Hampshire is that they do use paper ballots, which is the best and most secure way to hold an election. So they had paper ballots for everyone, 100% of the voters. That's the good news. The bad news is, in that 80% of those precincts, they counted them only by Diebold optical scan machines without bothering to hand check or double check a single one of them.
Well, what about the recount? How are they doing with that?
Well, since that's begun, first they started with the Democratic side, and now they're in the middle of the Republican side. They're finding errors and mistallies all over the place, across almost all the wards, all the candidates, and anywhere from, you know, 5 to 8 votes per precinct per candidate. But in some precincts, and with some candidates, you've got 40, 50, 80 votes off that would have only been found, you know, since they've done this recount. Anywhere from 4 to 10% errors in some of these precincts.
Hold that. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, 4 to 10%, certainly 10% would swing it from Obama having an 8% lead to Hillary having a 2% lead. So,
well, and
what actually happened, and what do we know about Hillary's so-called win there in New Hampshire?
Well, so far, unfortunately, Dennis Kucinich is the one who asked for the hand count up there. He ran out of money after having counted only about 25% of the ballots. And while they found errors, as I said, from, you know, 4 to 10% in some precincts, it averaged about 1%, which is pretty notable considering that many of our elections are decided on far less than 1%. But they didn't find yet any huge, you know, switches from Barack to Hillary or vice versa. That said, what we don't know is what happened to these ballots, because when they arrived in Concord, New Hampshire to be counted, the boxes were open. You could stick your hand in there. There was no seal on them. They were in extraordinarily bad shape. And furthermore, the Secretary of State up there has no idea what has become of the Diebold memory cards. These are the cards they stick into the optical scan machines that actually count these ballots. And those memory cards are exactly what you would use if you wanted to hack an election. Now, you might remember, Stan, or some of your listeners may have seen a documentary on HBO not long ago called Hacking Democracy, where they flipped an election. They hacked an election on these paper ballots by accessing that Diebold optical scan memory card. They were able to flip the results in such a way that you wouldn't know it unless you bothered to actually count the paper ballots by hand. Well, that hack that was seen in that film, documentary film, the same exact machine, that was the Diebold AccuVote OS version 1.94W that they used to hack that election. The exact same machines were up there used in New Hampshire. They haven't been changed. They haven't been fixed. Most notably, they haven't been thrown out entirely, which they should have been after such a startling vulnerability was revealed in those very machines. The fact that they're still using them, to me, is almost inexplicable, but certainly the fact that they're using them without bothering to hand-check a single one of them. I mean, we're talking 80% of the ballots in New Hampshire were counted on those machines, and nobody in the state felt it was important to, you know, look at any number of the ballots and make sure the machines were counting them properly. Just incredible. It's a mess. And right now, the Republican Albert Howard, who's a minor candidate up there, he actually saw on C-SPAN.
Hold that thought. Yeah. We'll be back in just a moment here.
You got it.
Oh, go right ahead. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Brad Friedman. And, of course, Brad is on the front lines of analyzing what's happening. We're talking about what happened in New Hampshire, where, of course, they had the paper ballots, but they were counted by a Diebold machine. And, of course, you can certainly scan these machines, scan the votes very well. First of all the cards, the cards that go into the machine, the Diebold cards, have disappeared. Is that right?
Yeah, the memory cards, no one seems to know what has become of them. The Secretary of State says, well, it's not our job to track them. And they were all run, programmed by the same company. This company named LHS Associates up there is the sole distributor for Diebold up in New England. They sell the machines, they program the machines, they count the ballots on those machines, they program those cards, and apparently those cards were sent back to that company. And remember, this company, LHS, which has a kind of a dirty background, as a matter of fact, their sales director pled guilty to narcotics trafficking in the 90s, and they have access to these voting machines and to these memory cards all day long. It's really incredible, just the sort of laxness that is, you know, applied to the chain of custody for our election systems and for these ballots up there in New Hampshire. You know, I ran some photos on bradblog.com of the ballot boxes as they were being brought back to be hand counted.
Now they're supposed to be sealed, aren't they? And they're supposed to really be under the state police is supposed to transport those so that nobody could so they change the ballots or could fudge the ballots. Is that right?
That's right, but that's not what happened. Two guys named Butch and Hoppy, and I kid you not, those are their names. Butch and Hoppy transported all of the ballots in the state. And when they showed up, like I say, in Concord to be counted, the boxes were open. You could reach your hand in.
Wait a minute. But weren't they sealed? You know, when they left when they left the precinct.
there is a sticker that they place on the top, and some of the folks, the election experts on the ground there, have begun referring to these as post-it notes because this sticker, and we've got video again of this at Bradblog. The sticker can be peeled off and put back on without leaving a mark. So these are not seals. These are labels. And, you know, they would be, the sticker would go across the top, the removable sticker. And then in the meantime, you could stick your hand in because the side of the ballots weren't sealed. You know, I was on a radio show a couple of weeks ago as this first was breaking. And somebody said, well, it looks like, you know, a box you would send. It doesn't look like a ballot box, a secure ballot box. It looks like a box you would send to your Aunt Tilly with a fruitcake for Christmas. And I said, no, that's the point. You wouldn't send a fruitcake to Aunt Tilly in a box like this. You would seal it up. You would tape it up. You would do something. These things were wide open. It was just incredible to see. And then at the same time, the Secretary of State up there is not allowing the candidates to count the unvoted ballots. Now, anybody who knows anything about how this works, you know, in order to reconcile the count, in order to know that you're actually counting the ballots that were cast, you need to see how many ballots were unvoted, because there should be a record of, you know, how many ballots there were total, and just to make sure that nobody has taken those blank ballots and replaced them. You know, filled them out and replaced them with the ballots being counted, if that makes sense. So he's not allowing them to do that.
No. Why isn't he allowing them to do that? I mean, doesn't he want to find out if there was any irregularity?
Yeah, apparently not, because he is just saying, no, you can't do that. The law says that all we have to do is let you count the cast ballots. We don't have to let you count the uncast ballots. And we don't have to let you even look at the poll books to determine how many ballots there should be, how many people signed in to the polls that day. This Secretary of State, by the way, he has been there, I believe this is his 16th term. He's appointed by the legislature. He's supposed to be a Democrat. But he was appointed by a majority Republican legislature up there for all of those years until it only recently turned Democratic, the legislature. So he's been appointed by a Republican legislature for all of these terms. It's simply astounding just the way people do not regard elections and ballots the way they regard, you know, money and ATMs. And slot machines, for example. I mean, if you're in Nevada, the Nevada Gaming Commission can walk into any casino they want, open up any slot machine they want, break it down, tear it down to the, you know, to the microchip level, and make sure it's all on the up and up. When it comes to our elections, well, you know, everybody thinks, what could possibly go wrong, and how bad could it be? And they don't there is simply no oversight, almost no security. I think it's a national disgrace.
Well, of course, we know that, for instance, that in Mexico, the last election that was held there, there's serious questions. The ruling party simply stole the election. This is what happened in Kenya. They've had a revolution in Kenya. Over 800 people killed. The whole country is in chaos because they stole the election. And here in America, why, of course, we're not even allowed to check these things out. But then we ran the elections in South Africa there when they elected Nelson Mandela. Printed up 80 million ballots for 40 million people, and most of the ballot boxes simply just disappeared. And we announced that Nelson Mandela, who is our pick candidate, the long-time, lifelong communist terrorist, had won before they'd even literally begun counting the ballots. I think maybe 25% were counted, and we announced that Nelson Mandela, the candidate picked for the United States, had won the election. And we've been fixing elections all throughout the world.
Well,
why should
we
be surprised it would happen here?
Well, yeah, well, exactly. And of course, obviously it has happened here. And I remember reading just as that Kenya situation you were talking about, just after that had broke and the violence was breaking out, riots and people were beginning to get killed, I remember reading that one of the reasons they knew that the initial reason that they knew that the election had been stolen was because the EU observers there had pointed out that the numbers that were posted at the precinct, because they counted at the precinct, they were able to compare the ballots, the count at the precinct with the then inflated numbers that were released later by the state. And it underscores again the importance of counting those ballots right then and there at the precinct and posting those results at the precinct.
And that's what we always used to do here in America, but of course that got in the way of the people who wanted to rig the election.
I can't explain why we've gotten away from that. It's simply the smartest, the best way, because you decentralize the counting so that it's counted before those ballots ever move anywhere.
And, of course, if they've got, Butch and who were moving
Butch
the ballots?
And Hoppy.
And, of course, traditionally, where the police always, the state police always moved the ballots, they were under constant surveillance so nobody could rig the elections.
Well, that's right. There was one state trooper that apparently trailed the van, supposedly, that Butch and Hoppy were driving out and picking up these ballots in. But I mean, I'll tell you, when you see these photographs of these ballot boxes, the conditions they were coming in, the video of them delivering these things, asking the Secretary of State Bill Gardner out there, well, you know, why are we leaving the ballots overnight sitting in the counting room instead of putting them in the vault tonight? And he just simply won't answer the question. He says, oh, there's nothing to worry about. You know, this room is sealed. Look, we're putting a seal on it now. And then the very next shot, you see the seal being pulled off without leaving a mark. It's mind-blowing. And that was just New Hampshire on January 8th. We've now gone through one election after another, and certainly this last Super Tuesday, where we're still today finding all kinds of problems and concerns all over the country, including, again, with those ballot boxes you had mentioned. Incredibly enough, just this afternoon, they're announcing now they're going to be recounting the entire New Mexico Democratic caucus. Amongst other problems that showed up was that a party chairwoman actually kept three ballot boxes in her house overnight on the night of the election, uncounted ballots inside in a race that at the time separated only 200 votes, separated the Obama and Clinton in that particular race. So they are now going to be recounting that entire thing, which is good news because there was all kinds of problems, including those ballot boxes. Long lines, yet again, we're seeing these long lines. People were showing up, finding their names were not on the registration rolls. And that's the thing to watch out for this year, Stan, is people who, you know, have been registered for years, they show up, all of a sudden they're not on the rolls, and they have to vote with a provisional ballot, which may or may not be counted. There were 17,000 provisional ballots in this in this New Mexico caucus. It's about 11% of the ballots were on provisional ballots. In the past, it had only been about 4%. So something happened with that registration system, and the registration rolls were contracted by the state to be run, get ready, by the ES&S company, one of the, actually the largest voting machine companies in the world. So in New Mexico, they sell the voting machines, they control the registration rolls, this private company, it's all privatized, the public has got nothing to do with it apparently anymore.
And of course, how do we know that these people aren't for sale? And of course, I suspect they are. Never forget the Ohio election in the year 2004, one precinct with 800 people there registered and 1,200 votes for George Bush. And the
4,000.
Was
yeah.
it really?
4,000. Right, yeah.
But they explained that by, they said the machine hiccuped. The machine had a hiccup. We'll be back in just a moment with Brad Friedman. Well, Brad, what happened in Los Angeles here during the Super Tuesday election?
Oh, boy. Well, Los Angeles, and we're still unpacking this particular mess, and it is an absolute mess. Los Angeles County has it's the largest county in the country. It's larger than two-thirds of the state, and they had a huge turnout in this primary on Tuesday. Now, the Democratic primary, there's two different... you had the Democratic primary, the Republican primary, and also the American Independent Party. They had a primary. Now, only the Democratic and American Independent Party primaries are open to nonpartisan voters, or they call them decline-to-state voters. Now, you had a lot of voters who had registered as independents, thinking they were, you know, registering as nonpartisan or decline-to-state, and they showed up to vote, and they found out, oh, they had been registered with the American Independent Party. That's not what they wanted to do, and they wanted to vote in the Democratic primary, but they couldn't because they were already in the American Independent Party. That said, the bigger problem, incredibly, this incredibly complicated scheme where they're calling it the double bubble problem, where if you were nonpartisan and if you asked to vote in the Democratic primary, which you were allowed to do, it's an open primary, you were supposed to be given your nonpartisan ballot, pointed to the Democratic voting booth where you'd get the Democratic candidates were on the template there, and again, paper ballots here, so that's the sort of good news, but you had to not only vote for your Democratic choice, you also had to fill in a second bubble that said, this ballot should be counted in the Democratic primary instead of this ballot should be counted in the American Independent primary. If you did not check the Democratic box or the American Independent box, if you happen to want to vote in that primary for some reason, then your vote would not be counted. We are talking about some 700,000 nonpartisan voters in L.A. County who... could have been affected by this mess. And as you know, the race is very close, again, between Clinton and Obama. It very well may come down to delegates, and the delegates are given out proportionally in California and in most of the Democratic primaries. And so these are no small numbers when you're talking about, you know, how many delegates they're going to get here. As of this afternoon, the acting registrar of L.A. County, the previous one who put this plan in place, she skipped town at the end of last year. So this new guy is stuck with this mess, and he has said that we're looking at about 100,000 ballots that have a vote, apparently, for the Democratic primary, but didn't have the bubble checked that they wanted to vote in the Democratic primary. So their votes were not counted by the machine. They're deciding what to do about it. Legal challenges are looming at this hour. It looks very well like this could be California's butterfly ballot, if you remember back to Florida 2000.
The hanging chad, I think that was the term that they used.
Well, there was the butterfly ballot was the one where they had the choices for candidates on both pages of the ballot. remember, and a lot of folks in the old Jewish old folks' home somehow managed to vote for Pat Buchanan instead of Al Gore back then because of this confusing ballot design.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Brad was talking about what happened in Los Angeles, where up to 100,000 people who, of course, were not Democrats, but they were independents. They wanted to be able to vote in the Democratic primary, but there was something there on the ballot where they had this. They voted for the candidate, of course, that they wanted, and then, of course, there was a place they were supposed to check it, but nobody really understood they had to check that. And if they didn't check this spot, saying that they were voting in the Democrat primary, even though they'd voted for the Democratic candidates, their ballot isn't counted. Is that 100,000 ballots or something close to 100,000?
100,000, it could be more than that. We're still waiting to figure out just how many ballots has happened on. And now they're talking about examining by hand each of these and hopefully getting them counted. The registrar said he would actually now like to make sure that they do get counted. That's the good news. The bad news, however, is because the same ballot was to be used for the Democratic primary, if you chose to vote in that as an independent, or in the American Independent Party primary, if you chose to vote in that, they used the same bubbles on the ballot. So if they did not check either Democrat or American Independent at the top of the ballot, there may be no way of knowing if that ballot was intended to be cast as a Democratic primary ballot or as an American Independent Party primary ballot. They may have no way of determining how thousands of these voters had actually intended to vote on those ballots.
Well, could they tell because they either voted for Hillary or Obama?
No, because the particular ballots that we use down here, and I happen to be in L.A. County and was able to vote on one of these ballots, it's similar to a punch card, except you use a marker to fill it in. But you put it into a template so that the ballot itself, the piece of the card that gets counted, all it is a bunch of circles. It's got no names on it. You slide it into the template booklet there, and that's how you choose, you know, and then it says Hillary Clinton, and there's an arrow, and you fill in that bubble. But once you take the card out of that template, there's no, it's hard to explain, but you understand how it's not on the ballot itself. So the Democratic, let's say it's a bubble number, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, those were all of the Democratic candidates if you were voting in the Democratic primary, but 8, 9, 10, and 11 were also the American Independent candidates if you happen to be voting in the American Independent primary using that same ballot. Confusing enough for you?
No, I can see what's happened, and how could they have been that incompetent unintentionally?
All I can tell you is the woman who put this design in place, Connie McCormick was her name. She was our registrar in L.A. County for years. And she led the battle against California Secretary of State Deborah Bowen, the new Secretary of State, who came in last year and, as promised when she ran, she did a top-to-bottom review of all of California's electronic voting systems to see how they worked and if they worked and if they could be hacked and so forth. She found, Bowen, the Secretary of State, found that all of them could be hacked within seconds' time. They could penetrate both the physical and software security of these systems and completely take over the systems. And in the bargain, the Secretary of State said, well, we're going to decertify a lot of these machines, the worst of them, and the other ones, we're going to put new security procedures, mitigation procedures in place for the February election. That was last summer, and Connie McCormick, the registrar of Los Angeles County, was amongst the loudest to complain. She said, everything was fine, this is ridiculous, and besides, you're endangering the election by forcing us to make these changes just 6 months prior to the election. So she was so worried about the scant 6 months that she had to make the changes here, that she then went and announced her resignation at the end of December, 1 month before this election. And this double bubble trouble mess is what she has apparently left behind as her parting gift to the voters of Los Angeles County. Now, the new registrar, well, he's not the new, he's the acting registrar now that's taken his place. You're not going to like this either, Stan. He came from Washington State. He's the fella who ran that disastrous 2004 gubernatorial election up in Washington State that you may remember, where ballots were appearing out of nowhere under desks and under coffee machines. That's who L.A. County has now. So we're just going from bad to worse in many ways here.
Well, because like over in Monterey, where they, of course, had their fellow in charge of the elections, and you talked to him, and he said, look, you've got to trust us. You know, I'm in charge of the elections. Oh, you've got to trust us. And then it turned out he was stealing money. He stole about $80,000. What else he stole?
Town.
How many elections he stole? You have to have honorable people. And when you turn against God, are you surprised when you get corruption at every level of our society? That's just the way they planned it. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Brad Friedman. We're talking about the elections. And, of course, the tragedy is that they said they could scam these elections. And, you know, we don't know who really wins, who really loses. I had a friend of mine running over in Monterey County a few years ago for state assembly. She went to bed at, you know, at midnight. She was ahead of her opponent 2-1. When she woke up in the morning, where her opponent was ahead 2-1.
Oh,
how did that happen? You know, well, this is the gentleman who was in charge of the election who stole $80,000. You know, used his credit card, and of course they didn't really want to punish him. I think he had to give the money back, and he got a little short time in jail. I think when a government official, you know, misuses his position, he ought to go to jail for 20 years. I think that the punishment for government officials should be much more severe than for the average individual, but it never is. Oh, my goodness, he has an aged mother, he needs to take care of her, he's such a nice guy, we all love him. And of course, when you've got government officials making rules on government officials, is it any surprise at all that government officials have a different system of law and justice, and they get special considerations? Right ahead, Brad.
Well, yeah, this fellow you're talking about, this Tony Anchundo, he pled guilty to no contest to 43 criminal counts. And you're right, it was just about two or three months after he had told me on the air that you have to have faith and trust in your elections officials, Brad. And then he was charged with these 43 criminal counts. You made the point that, you know, we need people we can trust in these jobs and so forth. And the best election officials in the country will tell you, don't trust any election official. Don't trust me. You shouldn't have to trust me. The system is not built on trust. It's built on checks and balances. And that's the important thing that I try to get across to people here, that you have to have transparency in the system from beginning to middle to end, so that you don't have to rely on the election director. The election director, if they want, they can be crooked, but it's hard for them to get away with anything if the chain of custody is secure, if the people are allowed to watch the counting of the ballots on election day. Those ballots, you know, never leave their eyes. It makes it a lot harder to game the election. The problem is, as we're getting more and more complicated with these systems, with these electronic voting systems similar to the mess that we had down here in Los Angeles County, where you had to fill in that bubble. I mean, if they wanted to vote in the Democratic
primary... Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Brad is simply saying that you should not have to trust your election officials. There should be so many checks and balances. There should be this transparency. It should be set up so that even if you had a fellow who was crooked in charge of the elections, he wouldn't be able to do any harm because, of course, he would be so obvious what he was doing. You have to have a, certainly you should have counting of the ballots in the precinct level, and those results are posted, and then those ballot boxes have to be firmly sealed. They have to have a seal that cannot be broken or taken off or peeled off and then put back on again. And it has to be under the control of the police as they take those ballots down to the local courthouse where they're going to be recounted again. And then you have to be able to check, you know, the results from their machine counting to the way it was in the local precinct. And if it's done properly, you could have a crook there and he wouldn't be able to do anything. Unfortunately, why, of course, they've managed to get this thing, oh, we've got to get the results out right away, and that's why we've got to do away with these things that make sure that elections are honest. But we're sure going to have our crooked figures out there very quickly. Well, let's go ahead, and Brad, before we go on, let's get your website or your blog site out there.
Yeah, and a lot of the stuff we're talking about here tonight is, as you know, Stan, well-documented at bradblog.com, where we report on this stuff every single day and try to give you the details of what's really going on. You know, with this mess, as mentioned here in L.A. County, where you could have, as many as 100,000 voters who are disenfranchised from this last Tuesday's election. Incredibly, the day after the election, the Los Angeles Times ran a report in which they downplayed all of the problems. The headline was, "Few glitches on Election Day, except for independents." Now, except for independence is sort of an understatement of the year, given the fact that we're talking about 100,000 or more independents. We've got some 700,000 independent voters who may have been affected in L.A. County alone. So at bradblog.com, we try to report on, we don't try to downplay these issues. We try to get at what is really going on here, let people decide for themselves. And much as I say about election officials that they shouldn't be trusted, I'll add, I shouldn't be trusted. Don't trust bradblog.com. We don't ask you to trust us. We say, here's what happened, and here's the evidence, here's the proof. Go find out for yourself. You shouldn't have to trust anybody here. I believe in 100% transparency and checks and balances and, you know, keeping an eye on everything that's going on, and that's the only way I think we can keep government honest. It's the only way we can keep elections honest, and it's a great way to keep me honest, because, you know, if you got a question about something I reported, you can jump into comments there, you can participate on the blog yourself, ask me questions, add the links to material that either supports or maybe disagrees with something I've reported, and I think that's the best way to go about it. 100% transparency.
All right, fine. Well, were there any other major problems across America there on Super Tuesday?
In fact, there were, I'm sorry to say. Just to quickly run through a couple of them. In Georgia, really bad situations across Georgia, particularly in the metropolitan Atlanta area, where they are using, these brand-new Diebold electronic poll books. As if the electronic voting machines made by Diebold weren't bad enough, now they're adding electronic poll books to the polling place, and these failed, these crashed, they held up the lines. There were voting machines that were sitting there, unused, ready to be voted on, and yet people were stuck in the lines for 90 minutes, 2 hours, 2.5 hours, one of the longest waits. Was about 2.5 hours at one polling place that ironically was called the Welcome All Community Center. And that's where they were waiting for about 2 hours. So that was bad in Georgia, as once again, people, it's a work day. Tuesday is a work day. They simply, they can't wait online 2.5 hours, or they drive by, they see the lines going around the block, and they say, you know what, I can't do that, and they drive on, and they're not able to cast their vote and have their voice heard in one of the few moments in America where you really do, or you're at least supposed to have your voice heard. And I think that's an outrage, particularly given how many folks, as you know, Stan, have died around the world in our country over the last many decades fighting for this right to vote and have your vote counted accurately.
Well, now, of course, I remember the, I think it was the 2004 election, where, of course, they seemed to target the areas where there were blacks, because, of course, they knew that they were going to vote Democratic. Well, I suppose in this instance, why, suddenly they would know that a lot of the blacks would vote for Obama. Was there any suggestion that there were certain areas that were targeted with very inefficient systems?
Well, you know what? We're still drilling down here. It is, what is today? Thursday after the Super Tuesday election. And as I try to warn people when we get to these elections, you know, you will see on election day or election night, you'll begin to see these media reports where everyone says, oh, there was a few hiccups, snags, glitches, snafus, but generally everything was fine. And I have to tell them, well, no, we don't know that, because the full extent of whatever problems are out there usually don't reveal themselves until the days following the elections, until we actually get to find out, for example, down in New Mexico, for some reason, thousands of voters who were registered as Democrats showed up and they couldn't even, and they were told that they weren't registered at all. 17,000 voters who had to vote on a provisional ballot. Which has now led to a complete hand count for the entire state caucus down there. So a lot of the problems don't reveal themselves until later. The New Mexico situation is one example where that's just coming to light. Haven't gotten to look yet at Georgia and see if there were specific areas that were targeted. But yes, you're absolutely right. Make no mistake about it. When there are long lines, when there are disenfranchisement going on, when folks drop off of the registration rolls, this is a known way. It's called vote caging. This is a known way of keeping people from casting their vote, and that's a real darn good way of stealing elections. And that is exactly the tactic that was used in Ohio in many places, where you just keep people from voting. You don't have to flip the election in your favor on the voting machines if you can keep enough of your enemies, if you will, the opposition, from being able to even cast a vote. And the areas that are targeted, I'm sorry to say, they're generally minority, elderly voters who tend to vote Democratic. Now, we had a Republican who spent some time in jail after having rigged the 2002 election up in New Hampshire. He's now out of jail. He's written a book called How to Rig an Election, and he talks about exactly these scams, and that the Republican Party was, you know, that this was second nature for them, and they viewed elections as war, as warfare, and anything was fair game in order to win elections. I don't think it is. Now, mind you, I don't think this is a matter of Republican or Democrat. I don't care who is doing it. You know, this needs to stop, because this is about the voice of the people. And, I'll point you again to bradblog.com. We've got a video up there of a Ron Paul voter, a fellow who had been a Democrat who changed his registration to Republican in order to be able to vote for Ron Paul. He was smart enough to bring a video camera with him on election day last Tuesday, again, down here in L.A. County. And he asked for his ballot, and they said, well, no, you're registered as a, I think they said that he was registered as a Democrat. He said, no, I've changed to a Republican. But they refused to give him a Republican ballot. He had to vote provisionally. And then, of course, when he got home, he called the Secretary of State's office, and they said, yeah, you're registered as a Republican. So I don't know why it didn't show up in the poll books down there. These are the kinds of problems that you begin to find, and as you begin to find them in the days following the elections, and as folks bother to report them, which most of the mainstream media does not do, but bradblog.com, we do, we put it out there, and suddenly we get all kinds of reports saying, yeah, that happened to me too. Here's my video. Here's what happened. Here's my story. And that's when the patterns begin to emerge, and we begin to get the full extent of all of the problems out there.
Well, now, what about the exit polls? Because certainly we know that the exit polls, in Ohio and several other states in 2004 show that John Kerry won the election. Yeah. But, of course, then when the votes were counted, why, George Bush ran the election. I suppose those machines were all hiccuping. But, you know, were there exit polls, and who runs the exit polls, and how can we find out what the exit polls were on Super Tuesday?
Well, Stan, you can't, because apparently you have to be a member of the network television elite, or, part of AP or New York Times in order to even see the raw exit poll data. The stuff that you and I are allowed to see is the stuff that comes out after they close the polls, and they actually, believe it or not, adjust the exit polls to match up with the results.
Now, why would they do an exit poll? I thought that it was to give us an evaluation of how people voted, how the people said they voted.
Well, they use them now, to determine, why such and such voted for this candidate or that, and how many black voters voted this way, and white voters voted that way, and Hispanic voters that way. But as far as the results, how did people vote? Who did you vote for? That's the stuff that they don't give you, that they never put out there. And the only reason we knew about the exit polls, the raw exit polls going for John Kerry in 2004, is because the data was leaked out at the time. CNN was releasing that data. They've learned better. They don't put that out anymore. So the only time we're able to hear about it is when it gets leaked out in some fashion, as it was, for example, the day after the New Hampshire election, when everyone was scratching their head trying to figure out what the heck went wrong, why they all predicted Obama was going to win and yet Hillary ended up winning, they're all saying, well, heck, what was wrong with our pre-election polls? They never stop and say, well, were the results correct? No, it's always, were the polls wrong? Well, the day after New Hampshire, Chris Matthews on MSNBC, he said, look, we were looking at the raw exit polls during the day, the raw exit data, and it looked like, quote, a significant win for Obama. And he was still asking for explanations as to how you could have had this enormous slip. Now, I've talked to another pollster who has not agreed to release their name, but this pollster told me that as of 7:30 p.m. On the night of the New Hampshire primary, Barack Obama was ahead by 3%, according to that raw, unadjusted exit poll. So we're seeing the same similar questions again about the exit polls, and incredibly, in this country, when the exit polls don't match the results, it's the exit polls that must be wrong. The results are always perfect.
Yeah, but of course the trouble is that we're using machines that can be hacked into. We never should have gone to those electronic machines, and they used, of course, the election of 2000, and day after day after day after day, we heard about hanging chads, hanging chads, hanging chads, hanging chads. We need a solution, and I thought at the time, they've obviously already got the solution, and it's going to mean less transparency in our elections. And of course, it was the voting machines, the electronic voting machines. We would no longer have hanging chads. Well, the truth of the matter is, we no longer have free elections. We have electronic elections, and you can always get the results to come out the way you want to, as long as you can hack the machines and then take the cards so that nobody can see how you programmed them.
Well, that's exactly right. And, people love to talk about those hanging chads back in Florida in 2000. The problem was not the hanging chads. Well, there was a couple of problems. One, those paper ballots that caused all those hanging chads were made by the Sequoia company, the same company that already had touchscreen voting machines in the pipeline and actually already being used in 2000 across Riverside County, California. So they stood to make a whole lot of money if those ballots didn't work right, and we now have seven whistleblowers from the company, from the factory, where those paper ballots were made. They were made actually out here in California, who have said that they were ordered to use bad paper for the Florida elections only, and they refused to do so time and time again. And finally, they came to work one day, and the bad paper that was delivered had been signed off on, and they had no choice but to use it. And then they were told in Palm Beach County only that they were to misalign those chads. And again, someone at Sequoia, a voting machine company, signed off on that. These guys, raised holy hell about it at the time, but nobody listened. And in fact, in this news report, they did a bunch of tests. They took the Palm Beach ballots made by Sequoia, and then they took other ballots made by Sequoia. Sequoia had been very proud of their problem-free ballots at the time, and they did tests side by side. And the tests on the paper that on the ballots that were made with the correct paper punched through cleanly, no problems. All the chads fell out as they were supposed to. But the Palm Beach ballots, all the chads hung. Now, why would that happen?
Chucks, I wonder why. Somebody just called in and said the onlinejournal.com video called Stealing America Vote by Vote.
Mm.
Do you know that at all?
I do. I'm actually in that film.
Oh, okay. How can we get a copy of that? Is it available?
That one is not yet released. Maybe I think there was an early version that was out. Let me, for the moment, go ahead. Stealing America Vote by Vote will be out in full, I think, in April, if I'm not mistaken. Until then, let me strongly recommend a film called Uncounted, The New Math of American Elections. And you can go to uncountedthemovie.com. It's a terrific film. It has been screening now all around the country. But you can buy the DVD online. You can look at a trailer at uncountedthemovie.com. I'm in that one, too, but don't let that stop you from watching.
uncountedthemovie.com, is that it?
That's it.
Uncountedthemovie.com.
And it just tells an extraordinary story of a lot of the citizen activists who have been out there trying to protect your vote, but most interestingly, it tells the story of a series of whistleblowers, including some, Stan, that you and I have talked about. Clint Curtis, for example, a fellow who was, claims that he was asked to create vote rigging software down there in Florida before the 2000 election. His story is told in this thing. Steve Heller, a whistleblower here in Los Angeles who worked at a Diebold legal company, a Diebold legal firm, and exposed that Diebold was using uncertified software illegally across the state of California back in 2004. He's in the film. A lot of these great patriots who are really fighting the good fight to try to turn this mess around.
All right, we're going to get to Theodore in just a moment here. But anyway, our guest this evening has been Brad Friedman, and once again, it's bradblog.com. Bradblog.com. I've been there. I get a lot of material from them. Excellent material. You may want to get on Brad's list. Get that on a regular basis. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, we've got Theodore on the line. Hi, Theodore. We haven't heard from you in a long time.
Well, I listen now and again, and I'm obviously inspired to call in tonight because I'm a supporter of Brad Friedman and Brad's blog. Are you still there, Brad?
I am. Thank you, Theodore. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and the check is in the mail.
All right, fine.
You know, I think you just had a birthday over there at your website, and I do want to support you because you're on my favorites list, and I go there regularly because, you know, for me, listening to all these pundits talking about what this vote means and what that vote means, once you understand that they're talking about counts that we can't verify, you know you're being scammed.
Well, that's right, and that's the whole point. And thank you, Theodore. That's very kind of you. Yeah, we did. Brad Blog just turned 4 years old, and we're still acting like it at the end of January. Thanks. That's the point. Look, even if the elections aren't being scammed, even if there's no fraud going on here, the point is we can never know unless we see every inch of the way what is going on here. That's why you need the transparency, because even the concerns, the fears, the questions that arise, was this election accurate or not, that in and of itself is a threat to democracy. I mean, I would think if I was, for example, George Bush, I would want to prove to everyone that 2004 election was counted and counted accurately. So you would think that the winners would want this system to be transparent as well. But it's remarkable how few of these politicians, these elected officials, seem to understand that.
I know you have to hold the middle ground because you're doing important advocacy and I honor that, but I'm not. You know, I know what's going on, and that's why I know how important it is that we track how the votes are counted. And you know, my favorite quote is, if elections really could make a difference, they wouldn't be letting us have them. You know, and because they control how the votes are counted and what games get played. And you know, the thing I have to keep remembering is there's nothing new about stolen elections. It's as old as democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the new piece is that we've got technology to actually want to track it and have some abilities and to follow people like you and support people like you who are willing to be out there on the front lines tracking it. So, again, it's nothing new. I think it's our interest that is new.
Theodore, we're out of time.
Well, thank you both.
Thanks for everything you do, and I know that you're there, you know, trying to get people to think about what's going on. Good night. God bless.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Theodore.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's been Brad Friedman. Brad, thanks very much for being with us. Fascinating hour, as always.
Always my pleasure to be here, and thank you so much, Stan, for keeping your eye on this, on these most important matters. I wish there was a few million more like you.
Well, I tell you what, if you anything important comes up, give us a call. We'll put you on as soon as we can. Bye-bye. Good night.
Bless you.
Okay, fine. Well, that's Brad Friedman, and we think he does a great job. And you need to understand that they're stealing the elections, because what's happened is we have crooked people in government. And once you take God and prayer and sense of right and wrong out of society, then why would anybody want to, you know, turn down a bribe? Why would anybody want to do what was right when you can do what's wrong? And I believe people have much more of a tendency to do what's wrong than right. After all, did you ever have to train a child to do bad things? Or do you have to train a child to do the right sort of thing? And you have to train them to do the right sort of thing because little kids, are most of them are inherently bad. And that, of course, is the nature of people. And that's why we need to bring people up in the way of the Lord. There has to be a fear of the Lord there. And there has to be punishment for when you do something as terrible as scamming an election. And they've done this time and time and time again, and we don't have time to go over all the things, but of course most Americans never heard of the recount that was done in Ohio, and of course they found a couple of Republican people who worked in the one of the election offices. They were supposed to count all of the votes, and they refused to do it. They picked out just precincts where they knew what the election results were going to be. And it was found that they had scammed the recount of the election somebody had paid a lot of money for, and they went off to the hoosegow. Why? Because, of course, they scammed the election in Ohio in 2004. And that is why George W. Bush is still the President of the United States. We have dishonest people at every level of government, and it's about time the American people understood. What we need, of course, to do is have people who fear God in government, not people who talk about God, who insist that they're Christians. We would never allow torture in America, and then signs legislation, the Military Commission Act, that exonerates anybody who's ever committed torture while employed in carrying out the instructions of our government here. You need to understand that we have people who say one thing, and then, of course, by their actions, they manifest something entirely different. What we do hope that many of you, of course, will want to get our four tape set on satanic crimes, or a book on satanic crimes, because it goes into the Bilderbergers. We hope that many of you will want to get the book on the Bilderbergers by Daniel Estill, and just the Bilderbergers, or the Bilderberger Diary by James Tucker. Our four tape set on the Bilderbergers, our DVD on the Bilderbergers, it's put out by Alex Jones, called Endgame. So there's a four tape set. There is a DVD. There are two books on the Bilderbergers. You won't find that concentration of material any other place. And then our new four-tape set on weather modification. Our DVD by Bob Fletcher on weather modification. They know how to modify the weather. Why do you think we're having such unusual weather at the present time? And you have to understand that everything that is done to modify the weather is top secret, because we don't want Osama bin Laden over there in the cave in Pakistan to know what we're up to. So we can't let the American people know. We have a great book on weather modification, and the techniques and means by which it's done. We have a great book called Harp, the Ultimate Weapon, and then a four-tape set on the Harp, of the High Altitude Rural Research Project, and our high. And you need to understand that for many years they've been able to create storms and droughts, and creating new diseases. And if you doubt that, you need to get the book, written in 1970 by Zbigniew Brzezinski, called Between Two Ages, where he talks about how they're going to be able to create storms and droughts in the future. This is 1970, remember, and how they're going to be able to create chronic diseases. And you know, there are all sorts of new and terrible chronic diseases in America today. Millions of Americans are incapacitated by them, and when doctors try to treat them, why, state boards go after their licenses. I wonder why. Well, pray for America, pray for revival, pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Our number, 1-800-544-8927.